So here we go. Welcome back, everybody, to the weekly Holistic Actions webinars, and welcome for the first time to some of the new community members. The intent of these weekly webinars are to walk with you guys to help interpret your animal's symptoms and let you know what's possible on the way to balance and the best quality of life that they can have. Tonight, one of the foundations of the roadmap on that road to balance is hydration. Food, hydration, vitality, energy. And tonight we have the founder of the Hydration Foundation and the person that first discovered the chia seed water that many of us use, and that perhaps Gina will talk about the discovery of. She's a Columbia University anthropologist who learned about the importance of water by studying the desert dwellers around the world. And it's right in the center of the sustainability studies that we're doing right now. And Gina Bria, it's all yours.
Dr. Jeff, thank you so much and welcome everyone. And please, I beg of you, and I'm grateful for you already, so that you can help me spread the hydration message, which is vital to our whole selves. And I'll tell you a little about my story and then what I discovered, and then I will hope we would have a great time for questions and answers. I don't know if I'll have all the, I might have some questions for you guys, so pay attention, listen up. we're really learning together. That's way more interesting and important, and all our neurobiology tells us that we remember everything differently when we learn together. For a common purpose. So I hope I bring you some of that juice and vital information. So my story starts with being an anthropologist and looking at desert dwellers around the globe. So each desert region on our planet, I looked at how the desert dwellers there, the indigenous, were hydrating themselves because I was confused. I thought you had to have 8 glasses a day to hydrate well. I thought everyone knew that. And this was clearly a case in which many cultures were not using that strategy, and yet they were better hydrated and in better shape, and so were their animals. So I wondered how that could be. And there's 3 basic ideas I really want to share with you and have you walk out with these 3 basic ideas so that as you move through your own life, you can begin to apply some of this thinking and see where it takes you. Because of course we're all individual bodies, but the first most important thing I want to share with you is that water is a multi-purpose, multi-dimensional entity. And it's got 3 particular properties I want to share with you. The second thing is that you are far more a body of water than you ever realized, that you are yourself made of water in ways that we didn't understand. And I can't wait to share that with you. And the third is that all living things are made of water, and we are on a water planet. And we are with other sentient water beings. And as we discover that basic principle, which I think is really missing from our biology, what that opens up is then how do we communicate through our water systems with the other living bodies of water on this planet, whether they are clouds in the sky or oceans or rivers or puddles, or they are amoebas or bacteria or animals or microbes or birds, or in other words, this is really eye-opening in terms of the water in me singing to the water in you and all other living things. So first let's go to what water is and why we're missing this massive knowledge that's going to kind of shift things for you. So my work has been with those desert people discovering they were using plants for their hydration. They were getting their hydration from their food, and they were getting it in things like cactus and aloe and tubers hidden under the ground that had this more gelatinous kind of coating. Chia seeds, it's a great conversation to have around chia seeds as actually a desert plant. It's a sage, a seed from a sage. And these plants were technically taking in photosynthesis from the sun and infrared rays and minerals from the soils and parking those together in such a way that they were changing the organization of water molecules. I mean, I'll just say that again so it starts to land. When you look at an aloe plant and you see all that jelly-like quality in there, that is water not in liquid state anymore. It's in a plasma state. It's in a jelly-like, jelly-like, plasma-like, liquid crystalline. And this is a phase of water, at least that's the language we're using now in science, a fourth phase of water. There's probably millions of phases of water that we haven't really, really identified, but we know there's vapor, we know there's liquid, we know there's ice, but in between ice and water and liquid water, there's this whole long organizational properties of molecules getting into alignment. And they can do that in such a way that they are just 10% more viscous than liquid. So you wouldn't know you were drinking plasma because it just feels very liquidy. It's a little bit more silky. Or it can go all the way to something as gelatinous as, let's say, bone broth. So you get that really solid jelly stuff. And I'm just making that visual for you because I want you to really reconceive yourself when we talk about you as a body of water. Then we think of, you know, when people say we're bags of water, we think, well, why am I not sloshing around? It's because you are a body of water in this gel-like, plasma-like state. Of course, there's liquid water within you, and it comes in various concentrations, but your tissues, even your cartilage, your bones, your eye sockets, when you reconceive yourself as made of plasma water encased in a skin, and this of course is all forms of water too, right? Now we have a new way to talk about what we are, and then we look at our animals differently. So thinking about this idea, going back to the idea of you are a body of water, all other creatures around us are water-based in a plasma form, and they may have liquids in, all living things have liquids in, but they all have, we have vapors too, right? We just don't have ice because we're not close enough to get frozen yet. But as I said, there are probably many more states of water or phases of water than we ever were really alert to. We were just kind of only looking for liquid. And so now that we think about ourselves as this sort of, as kind of, I want you to think of yourself as a jellyfish with bones stuck in and floating in that jelly, just so that we can stomp around on land. That's the anthropological adaptation, the evolutionary adaptation that got us to be land creatures, but we're still water creatures. So, water has these phases, and water does different kinds of work or labor in its different stages, in its different phases. So the jelly phase or the plasma-like phase is doing something quite different than the liquid phase of water. This is also totally new science. We had no idea that water was doing different kinds of work in the body by virtue of being in its different stages. So the stage of liquid is more about flushing out, moving through, Think about lymph fluids and circulation systems and delivery systems for your blood. Whereas the jelly-like stages, which are the materials inside your cell, are more the plasma water. Those are about organizing materials to capture and pull out toxins. But there's a really important thing that this stage of water does that the other stages of water doesn't do, or doesn't do as effectively. And that is, in this plasma state, water conducts electricity. It has charge, and it's conducting electrical function in our body through the plasma. Not so much the liquid. The liquid can do it, but it's not the superconductor by virtue of the molecular organization that happens when it tips into this plasma-like stage. And that water then is the water that circulates cellular signaling. So I'm going to say that in a different way for you, just so I have different ways of helping you land this information. So water is a material, and it has stages. So it's a vapor stage, it's a liquid stage, it's a plasma stage, it's an ice stage. These stages are material, the materiality of water. But water is all more than just the material of it. It's also an energy by virtue of these electrical functions. So we are really truly fueled. Our energy is water energy. And we can talk about ATP and all these other forms, but in the end, it's all based on access to that water alignment, those molecules set up in this stage. And then the final thing, so water's material, water's energy, and then here's the real fun part, it's information. So water is the conductor of information and carries information and delivers information. So a quick example of that would be if you are getting your water through food and you're eating a basil leaf, you're getting the information of that basil leaf is dissolved and delivered by the water molecules. So I'm trying to expand your idea of what's happening with water. And maybe my favorite example of that would be mushrooms, because when you bring mushrooms into your diet, and I don't know, are you allowed to feed mushrooms to animals? I'm glad to hear that, because when you eat a mushroom, you are actually getting the entire archive that mushroom and that mycelium network has picked up. And now you're delivering it to your system. And that means there's all sorts of information that's either delivered to us or denied to us by virtue of the food we're eating. So if we're not eating a wide variety of different kinds of plants, which is how the desert people were hydrating themselves, through these food structures and food delivery, food information, plus the hydration through the water molecule. This is incredible news, because now we can start to think about what kind of information is coming in with my hydration. How can my hydration help deliver that information in the food, partner with it, and go forward? So we covered the fact that you're a body of water, and that you're in the plasma state, and that is all your cells and all your tissues, and maybe even your bones. Now we're able to talk about bones as liquid crystalline structures that are maybe a little bit more stable than what we're used to thinking about water appearing as. But once we open our mind to the idea that water is not just liquid or vapor, that it's in these states that we are just really identifying. They're always been there. It's not like this is new water, right? So now you have yourself as a body of water, and you as a creature of water among other creatures of water in water. We're in a water planet, whether we're in vapor or whether we're in the ocean. We're really surfing our lives in ways that we didn't think of before, and we're coming into that as water creatures. And then there's the aspects of what water is like, that it's both material like a liquid and an ice cube, and it's also energy for us, and it's also information. And that the way to get these liquids into us in the most surprising way is to be using far more of our foods to get our hydration than our water bottles, which aren't so great. they create a lot of problems. You know, you can flash flood your system in as little as 10 minutes. And then now we have issues around the water being so contaminated that you're actually trying to hydrate yourself with very deleterious water, water that's contaminated and has a lot of issues.
Quick question for you, Gina.
Yes.
To get water through plants, is it only with raw, or do you still get it when they're cooked?
Great question. Raw is, you know, up and ready to go, right? But even if you think about sauteed mushrooms, and you see that pan and all the mushrooms and the way they're releasing materials, you're still getting a vast amount of water. The percentage is going to go down, but because we're talking about water beings and how prevalent the water molecule is, then you start to understand that the difference between eating a pear, which I think is 86%, versus a gorgeous romaine salad with those romaine leaves being 94% water, to eating a cooked squash, which is still gonna be above 80% water. Then you're like, oh, well, whatever. I'll have it all. I'll have the cooked, I'll have the raw, I'll have the smoothie, I'll have the, you know, I'll have the soups. The soups have been astounding strategies for hydration through all cultures. I mean, we find these pottery shards that are 10,000 years old and they have the liquid crystalline structure embedded in the clays, where you can see the water molecules and the relationship with the food actually imprinted on the clays. So my job as an anthropologist is to bring this kind of information back for us to help us move out of this idea that, you know, the way you're going to hydrate yourself or your animals is going to be just through liquid water. So we open up a whole new world that way. That's a lot. I just rendered a lot of information. Surely there's going to be questions about that. Let's just do a back and forth so I know I'm hearing you and seeing where you guys want to go. You have any further
questions? Lauren asked, is there evidence that structured water, you haven't really moved into structured water yet, so we should probably hold off on that question, right?
Yeah, well,
okay.
I called it plasma because I wanted to give you the image.
But oh, okay.
Another way that we're talking about it is the structure of the molecules as they line up nicely and they suddenly can start cohesively sending signals out and receiving signals because they become conductors, superconductors. That's sometimes called structured water. It's such a lousy term, right? Does not turn anybody on. Sometimes it's called ordered water or liquid crystalline water or easy water. Dr. Pollack calls it exclusion zone water, meaning that water in this state begins to move out contaminants out of the cell structure and into the lymph system. So it can be carried out by the liquid labor, right? So there's lots of names for this, and science is touching on it from many different disciplines. So if you're going to talk to somebody in quantum electric domains, they're going to talk about it differently than, say, somebody might talk about plasma. But this is all under the umbrella of structured or structuring water. Yes. So who has a question about structured water?
So Lauren's question was, whoops. Lauren, do you want to get on? Because I think you're going down a side way. You want to speak, Lauren? You're muted.
Yes, I would love to. Thank you so much. Okay, so we have an RO filtration system, and I've been adding minerals back in, but I've learned about the structured water system.
Right.
And my curiosity and my concern are wondering if I know that structured water doesn't remove things, but it changes the molecular structure. And so how can you speak to, like, bacteria and pharmaceuticals and contaminants that just in the structured water versus like an RO system? And do you need to do both or?
Right. Well, you're right in the middle of the biggest question that's haunting everybody. So congratulations for being part of a cohort of people who are trying to think this through. There is a lot to say. I will set this up for you by talking again about this spectrum that water exists on. It's going from vapor to liquid. You know, it's doing this dynamic change where its molecules are getting closer and closer to each other, and they're starting to spin together cohesively and share electrons and generate electricity. And when water tips into this phase, finally called structured or ordered, or we're calling it plasma, this is the stage water self-purifies.
And do we have that evidence under microscopes and things?
Yes. So if you look at Gerald Pollack's work on easy water, he specifically called it easy zone water. Now, the big question is, how do we know what the balance is? How much is it able to get out when there's so many contaminants floating around? My husband's coming in with the groceries. I'm just going to shut the door so we don't wear it. You'll have to unpack those groceries by yourself. I'm on Zoom with a bunch of beautiful people. Sorry.
No. I hope you don't mind the formality.
But this is a very important question, because theoretically and in the lab, we have seen water purify itself of very, very serious contaminants. So theoretically, water in the easy stage can decontaminate. It doesn't need the RO system. But we don't have the final answer yet, because we don't know how contaminated that water is, and does it then overwhelm this balance that water's trying to get to? So some people are just like, oh man, you have to put it through some kind of a decontamination filter. And some people are like, no, the structured water did fine. I don't have those issues. So it may be by virtue of your personal terrain or the terrain around you in some way, but we don't really have the definitive answer. We have the definitive answer that plasma form water, easy water, structured water decontaminates, absolutely. How now getting it out into the real world is another question. But lots of people are using RO plus structuring of some kind. So they'll put it through a vortex so that on the other side of the RO, where you have water that's been decontaminated and left without any of those minerals, you know, it's really so purified that it's almost, you can almost taste how dry it is in the mouth, right? So, let me just close this other door so we don't have this
sound. Yeah, please.
Maybe you can unpack later, because I'm hearing all the rattle, okay? And I'll thank you. This is what happens when you're married. All right, so the question about adding minerals pick up the electrical charge. They engender, in relationship to the water molecules, another round of electric charge. So putting minerals back in your water, it becomes a very smart strategy for continuing to decontaminate things, because the minerals bring electric charge, and the electric charge is what signals the water molecules to address whatever other molecules are there and organize them also in a healthy way. So I brought a little salt. This is my little salt dish, and I always just take like a pinch, and my water gets salt. So yeah, I know it's an important strategy. It's the very least you can do. So please don't ever drink a naked glass of water again. Put something in it, whether it's salt or minerals or lemon or apple cider vinegar, or teas work, soups, you know, all now you get in the whole range of things you can do. Sea salt is really valuable. And this brand I'm using is called Redmond Salt. It's from the Utah desert. And I love that it's so ancient, but any kind of good sea salt.
So does it matter if some people say that it's best if you put the salt on your tongue and let it dissolve and then drink your water? Mm-hmm. Is that significantly better than putting it in the water, and why?
I've done both. And I think it's going to be a personal strategy. Some people are going to be like, that salt on my tongue, I don't like. I think it's again, now we're going back to discovering your own value in your own body and which really works for you, but either one is really important. So I don't think there's enough, again, it's like the answer between cooked or raw. We're going to have to swim through our own balance and find what that is. Also, salt baths. Oh my goodness. If you're not using salt baths, please do, especially after you fly on an airplane. Fantastic. And of course, baking soda, because baking soda is a form of salt. Those are really, really valuable strategies for cleaning up and helping your water inside get organized. What other questions do we have?
I think that's sort of it at this point. So,
Dr. Jeff, maybe I could ask you now, do you think we could show, we'll go to the next conversation about what fascia is. And we have a little video. I think we'll be able to load it. This video shows Dr. Jean-Claude Gimbarteau, who was a French hand surgeon. He is a French hand surgeon, and he put a micro camera under the skin because he was doing hand surgery. He had already tourniqueted the hand so that there was no blood flow. And because there wasn't the red, we suddenly saw the white, and he saw things that nobody had ever seen before. So what we're showing you is a connective tissue, also called fascia, that is another way to talk about our tissues. So the fascia structure in our body is so pervasive that now we've been able to trace it down, that fascia actually goes down to the cellular level and interacts with the membrane of the cells. So it is everywhere. It's all around us. And you'll see that it looks like the mycelium under the ground, just like the mushrooms and the whole network that's under the soils. And this is amazing. And if we don't get it up, it's no problem, Jeff, because we put the link in the chat.
Let's see if I can show it.
Okay, while you're still trying to get that, I'll just explain fascia. And the new research on fascia, when you are able to see it, like this whole spider web network that's three-dimensional, it involves keeping us wrapped. You know, you really are the jellyfish with the bones stuck in the jellyfish. It isn't really quite the way we thought, where, you know, you're sort of the hip bones connected to the whatever bone, and that you're a bone structure. You're actually this beautiful fascial network. There we go. We can see it. We're just going to give you like a 12-second
kind of three-dimensional structure. As you can see deeply into the fascia, this is strolling under the skin by Dr. Jean-Claude Gimbarteau. When you see the behavior of the fascia under some pressure, you start to understand how it is moving. Watch as the fascia...
That's plenty for us to see, right? Did you see that? You saw the actual water droplets moving along the spider webs, but also inside tubes of it, because it can be tubular, it can be stretched very thin, it can come back together and form more of a dense form, which is how you get, you know, fascial injuries, and then everything starts to stick together. What I wanted you to see in that video is, well, one, how miraculous we are. I mean, we didn't even know that was going on in there, because our anatomy came from dissection. And by the time it was a desiccated cadaver, all of that had dried up. And we didn't know it was there. I mean, it was a beautiful time for discovering these things. So as my work in hydration and seeing fascia for the first time, and I'm like, hey, bing, bing, that is a water delivery system. Everybody, please, let's connect it to what we're seeing, which is that as you move that fascial tissue, you are moving your hydration around the body and helping flush and push water out and bringing fresh water in. So movement turns out to be probably way more important than guzzling 8 bottles of water a day. And there's 2 reasons for that. One is the mechanical delivery of hydration to spread out to your extremities, to move it through your system. I'll give you a quick, while I'm thinking about it, I want you to know that if you put your chin to your chest and up, this is a very important, I do it when I'm on my cell phone, if I'm, you know, I try to keep it away from me, but because you're doing an entire flush down your synovial canal, you're bringing a complete new flush of water through your whole dashboard. That's your dashboard back there that tells everything else what to do next. So I think it's vital for us to understand the role of movement in hydration. And now that you've seen fascia, you get it, that it is put mechanically moving things, your fluid dynamics, but also it turns out that when you move, you start generating electricity through the piezoelectric effect. So not only now are you moving hydration into your system, you are also generating electrical charge for your energy. And that's linking up with the water molecule, which has its own electrical charge. And suddenly you're getting a lot of charges going on. So now we have a reason for why our animals need movement. It makes so much sense that a health practice is about getting them in motion to deliver the hydration all the way through their system and to begin to give them that energy and that electric charge. But electric charge is doing 2 things. It's giving energy, right? But it's also exchanging information. It is amazing. The cell signaling is all run on electrical function. It's like, just like we have the computer now to understand as an analogy for how all this works, that there the signaling is coming and the coherency of that signaling, the cleanness of it depends on our hydration level and our having pollutants or waste out of our system so that the water can clearly communicate one cell to the next and then orchestrate the whole healing phenomena.
Gina, can you speak up a little bit? Your voice sort of, when you lean back, we can't
hear you quite as well. Everyone tells my speech
better.
Yeah. Well, speak up now. Who else would like to ask questions? Let's have a back and forth.
Diana wants to know about, and I haven't heard of this product, so maybe Jean Hovey can chime in here. Dr. Jean knows about kitty cats. How about the cat water they sell for urinary formula? Is that good, or is it better to use spring water with a dash of salt?
Well, I'll take a first shot at it. This is Dr. Jean. If somebody's selling it, they have processed it. So stay away. That would be my advice. What do you think, Gina?
I agree. You know, products are useful, maybe, but we should be using them therapeutically, you know, to get over a hump, not as our basic baseline strategy for hydration. You know, we should be able to get ourselves to a place where, you know, our intake is solid and we know what we're doing. We're getting juicy fruits and vegetables and mushrooms and we're moving a lot and we're engaged with also a lot of sound. So I'm ready to move on to the next thing I wanted to share about sound and frequency. Well,
can I just stick one other little thing in here?
Yeah, let's, before I announce that so that anybody wants to clean up this.
Wait. You just scared the cat. We are talking about cats. They have a low thirst drive. They're not natural drinkers. ordinarily they would be like the Maasai, and they, or well, I guess the Maasai drink blood, but they would get all their water from their prey. You know, desert cats are not, they don't drink really hardly at all.
Yeah, so, right now my cat's not eating, so it's not getting any, and only drinking. And we're from a well, so the well water is so horrible that we have to use bottled.
Yeah, I would say one thing, if you really have a problem with hydration in a cat, learn how to give subcutaneous fluids at home and give Normasol or one of the, you know, they're all processed too, but you're giving it directly basically into the bloodstream. So you want the kind of, you know, the kind of fluids that already have the electrolytes in them. But when we're talking about trying to get cats to drink more, you know, A, never feed dry food to any cat, period, ever. I just had to tell somebody that a little while ago. And you know, but you can add moisture to their food. I do that to my cat, yeah. And he tolerates it, but you know, or something, a real high moisture food like baby food, maybe, Diana.
Oh, that's the only thing he's eating right now is the baby food. So I just got him started to eat that. He does drink a lot though. Yeah. I just want to make sure.
Yeah, it's it. When they're sick, they cannot drink enough to make up for the water losses through breathing and all that, and urinating, and you know. So that's some. Why don't you post in the forum? I'll keep an eye out for you, and we can take the talk over there.
Okay, thank you.
And Gina can go on with her.
Dr. Jean, tell me, do you guys recommend chia seeds for animals? I would love to hear if that is a valuable food for all pets or some pets.
Well, it's not something a cat would eat in nature, so I tend to, you know, think Mother Nature knows more than we do, but I'm just learning about this structured water and stuff. And I opened my refrigerator a little while ago, and what was sitting on the shelf right there? Chia seeds. So I'm really interested. And you know, if I can calm my cat into eating them, when I make his food, I certainly would add chia seeds or ground flax or something, you know, that would be that will hold more moisture as a way to get more moisture into him.
Right.
And I'm sorry, Gina, I guess I'll have to interject, because virtually everybody I talked to, and Diana, this I think might be good for your kitty, is chia water. Not the chia seeds themselves, Diana, as much as soaking a cup of water, 2 tablespoons of ground organic chia seeds in the cup of water, soaked overnight, and then use that water for your kitty that's drinking so much, and it's going to hydrate much better than it would with regular water. And
yeah, this is what I want to hear.
And the water product, Diana, that you're mentioning might be the Purina, designed to get cats to drink more water while they eat the Purina dry food.
Right, duh.
Oh, yeah. So I would go with the chia water.
And Dr. Jeff, Christine asked, can we use whole seeds instead of ground? But the ground is better, right?
You get more gel that way, for sure. Yeah. Right. But yes, okay. You can use the whole seeds. I just realized that you don't want to leave that out for too long because it goes bad. Gina, you probably noticed that it's pretty high fat, the chia seeds.
It is high fat. Yeah. But
unfortunately, Diana's cat is allergic to chia seeds and all types of seeds. So it's definitely a struggle with this kitty. Another question for you, Gina, that was asked is, if you're using a high quality mineral water, should you also be adding salt, mineral salt?
I don't think so. I think they can... you don't have to. I have done both, but I also just use a good mineral. I think it's urgent given our agricultural and our soils today are, you know, very damaged. I don't know if this is a good time to talk about agriculture.
Well, I'm going to start you off with a question and then you can move into agriculture. So I am passionate about foraging. And in some recent books that I've read, I've found some super good ones. She said, if you eat 3 leaves of a wild weed foraged every day, you will be healthier. And that they've actually shown just that small amount can make a huge difference. And it seems that because they're not in an agricultural situation, that the foraged foods, by and large, have huge more nutrition available.
Yes. And the reason is they are interacting with the microbes that haven't been disturbed by cropping, monocropping, and they're in place. And what they're actually doing is they are absorbing vast amounts of electrical information that when you eat that, you're getting huge downloads of information. So that helps now like reset the conversation, because if you think, well, 3 leaves, so what kind of nutrition could there be in that? Well, now I hope I've moved you over to really get that you're getting information through that water molecule and through those plant structures. And it makes a very big difference whether you're eating foods that have undisturbed life with soil and microbes in the soil that absorb all that information. We know with high microbial communities in soils that the BRICS measure for all those plants are more nutritious. But that's a very small thing you're measuring is nutrition. When you start thinking you're measuring information that involves sun and moon passages and earth seasons, and you know, it's a very big archive we're talking about. And we are missing that from our own biology as modern people. So it's great that you're doing the foraging. Purslane is my favorite wild hydrating plant. I really love purslane. That's a good one.
And well, Jim,
yeah, go ahead.
You're about to talk about sound and water.
Yes. So we have been talking about sound the whole time. We just didn't know about it because we're calling it information, but we could equally call it sound and light and biophotons and vibration. You know, vibrations are also a form of electromagnetic waves that generate harmonic reactions. So what I'm learning in water science, hanging out with all these cool scientists, is really the frontier of science, of water science, is about frequencies more than it is even about the electric charge or the plasma state. So we're moving, the conversation is advancing now to the whole conversation around frequencies, sound, and light, and that those are only conducted by the water molecule in this beautiful state where it's plasma form and can pass coherent information on to other cells and other creatures. So you can even vibrate to your animals, and I'm sure you know about that. Right? That's amazing. So it turns that I can put it this way, like no water, no frequencies. You gotta be hydrated to get that action going. And then, and this is why now, why I've spent my whole career now talking about hydration and helping people understand how foundationally important it is. And what that's allowed me to do is say things, they may not be exactly accurate, but they're helpful. And that is saying something like sound is hydrating. Those frequencies going in interact with the water molecules and allow the water molecules to organize themselves more profoundly. The same with sunlight. Who would say that sunlight is hydrating? But those specific rays from the sun are electromagnetic forces that come in and help the water organize itself to become more efficient at hydrating and passing information. So to say sunlight is hydrating, the proper amount for your genetic heritage, For your animal, you know, you'll know what that is as you raise them and are close to them. And then the opportunity to play music or to put on.
Gina, before you move to away from sunlight, is mm-hmm. there a way you can turn on a light? You're pretty much in the dark now.
Oh, I could. Hang on. I'm used to sitting in huts, so I don't notice it. Thank you. Yeah. So on the theme of maybe using even something for your animal to hydrate them, exposure to sunlight, but even an infrared lamp. And maybe in some cases in which you're helping an animal through something. Now I have to ask, I don't know, Dr. Jean, Dr. Jeff, have you ever used infrared treatments on animals?
For hydration? No. No, but it's a brilliant idea.
But you have used infrared.
For hydration?
Healing. No, for healing. I think the point you're making, Gina, is pretty much everything that we do and that we encourage is causing hydration and we don't realize it. And Eve has a good question right to that point. And you were going to talk about agriculture, so this sort of fits into that. The mushrooms and the microgreens that he's been purchasing at the local farmers market have been grown in a greenhouse using sterile tree bark or in a light and temperature controlled greenhouses. Does that limit their nutrition? Should you only be getting mushrooms that have been foraged or grown outdoors?
Well, I do think that that these are very important questions. And I do think his instinct is right. They're less, but how less, we're not sure. And I'd sure rather have you some kind of mushrooms in your diet than to say, well, I'll forego it because it's not an outdoors mushroom. The same with microgreens. They're accomplishing something and they are water bodies somehow. But if we can, you know, work our way back to we don't want the good to be the enemy of the perfect or the perfect to be enemy of the good, right? You still want to begin incorporating these things. And, you know, I will say, in my journey here, that I have been led to better solutions just by getting myself more hydrated. I feel, you know, led on to the next thing, to pay attention to this or to pay attention to that. I certainly grow sprouts in my house and I only grow them with structured water. I always put it through a little spin funnel when I rinse my sprouts because I want them to have the electricity generated by that vortexing. And then now to talk about agriculture, the Hydration Foundation and the projects that we're initiating are very much concerned with irrigating with this state of water so that what's happening once we bring the electrical charge back into the irrigation system, wow, we have seen the microbes under the ground, already in the soil, that have been dehydrated. They're just panting down there, or they've just shriveled up and they're, you know, like not active. When you get them this water that has the electric charge, suddenly these communities start to revive and revive each other. And you get soil health and plant health. And not just soil health, you get soil accumulation. So you're really literally starting to grow soil through the microbial life cycle of life and death and their, you know, distribution of their as their bodies throw off, their material becomes part of the soils. And we're able to, I mean, this is very hopeful information, you guys. We've got a way to recover our soils way faster than we thought just by using the kind of water that nature intended, what came out of the springs and the wells and the rivers.
And that goes to, that actually speaks to biodynamic farming, where they make preps from different things. And then before you put it on the soil, you put it in a big bucket and you create a vortex two directions. Mm-hmm. And then you spray that on the plant or on the soil. And I've seen pictures of 1 year, like tripling the size of the soil depth.
In 1 year. So yeah. our hope here is we can, and of course all the people working in climate have kind of come to a very powerful conclusion that our soils could recover the climate issue very quickly. And we get food security and better food with that at the same time. We get the restoration of the rest of the water bodies on the planet, all those insects and the bees and, you know, the birds and the alligators and all those other creatures we're living in. So if there's anything hopeful about this conversation is as we know this science better, or we know it instinctually, like, you know, Steiner was famous for documenting these peasant traditions of making the compost tea and doing the vortexing and applying that as the first germination went out. Wow. These traditions are found around the world where they were enhancing water somehow in order to get more of the electric charge point. Even the Incas, who were using pure mountain water coming right down the mountains, you'd think you couldn't get any better. They actually lined the channels in their fields, the irrigation channels, with ceramic tiles, because once the water hit the ceramic tiles, it picked up electric charge. So these traditions are very old. In fact, I'll tell you one of the oldest, which is just a delicious, as an anthropologist, I love sharing this, but you know, many traditions, the women were the seed carriers, seed caretakers, and the planters, and planted with sticks. And before they put the seed in the ground, they would put it in the palm of their hand and would spit on it. And the information in that spit was personalized medicine for that crop that would then grow. It was a beautiful, energetic, electric match. And wow, wouldn't we love to be more engaged in that kind of thinking?
So Gina, an organic farm. Okay, I volunteered at an organic farm. Cool. When they're watering, so what could they do, practicality? Mm-hmm. 10-acre farm, oh, probably not that big, 5-acre farm. Mm-hmm. What in practicality could they do to improve the water?
Well, certainly the compost tea, because now that you know that the water is switched into this state through minerals, and if you put compost, it's the detritus is all electric charge. There's so much in minerals that is bringing that electricity back into the water that then brings that juicy extra charge to the plant. So many of the traditional practices are already creating structured water.
You talked about the ceramics.
Right.
What about if on the end of the hose, if you're spraying,
yes.
What if you had sort of like a ceramic, they're like ceramic filters or something, right?
Right. There's a number of companies that make, they're basically spin funnels, but they're, you know, they're on screw-on form. So we have a lab at the Hydration Foundation. We went and founded it with Dr. Pollack. I trained with him to learn how to identify, you know, how do we test for structured water? Because he was a busy scientist and he didn't need to be doing that. And I kept saying, you need a third party independent, you know, lab to test all the people who are coming to you with products that want to get out there in the world and do good. So, there's a company called Spring Aqua. They have an agricultural device that covers, you know, like 5 acres with one device. There's Patrick Durkin at the Wellness Enterprise has a little one you can screw on a hose. I think Kenny's does that too, come to think of it. There's another company
called— Now, what about if people have a large kennel or have horses? Would that be something that would be good to put on the—
Absolutely. So we—
And when you're bathing your dogs as well, you could have something like that, right?
you're getting the whole thing. If you're bathing your dog and you put some baking soda in the water, you're really going to help them. If you
have Epsom salts,
right, or you have, you know, even putting essential oils, the relationship between the essential oils or the minerals are having conversations with that water. There is talk going, there's charge going on. That conversation generates donation of electrons one to the other, and they start this whole battery. And it's great stuff to know, and for ourselves and our animals.
Well, we're down to our last 3 minutes.
Oh no!
What are the last 3 minutes that you want to tell us?
Well, I really would love to just share this idea that your animal, your pet, is a body of water, and you are a body of water, and there's something going on invisible that we didn't really know how to account for, but it's actually quite real, and that you might even want to turn up the dial for yourself about wanting to broadcast to your pet your joy, your peace, your care for them, your tenderness. It's real, it's being communicated. And to try to pick up what are our animals wanting to say to us. You know, it's probably going to be pretty simple. I love you. Thanks for taking care of me. Want to go for a walk? How about some dancing? Want to put some music on? Let's get out in the sun and play. We'll run around. But that communication is unique. Of course, you know this. To each animal is singing their own song to you. And so what better life can we have as pet owners than be receiving the song of our animal?
Well, I love it. This is incredibly wonderful. I'm sure everybody, including the dogs, are saying that they've loved the talk.
Well, I want you to remember that you're a body of water and that everything living is around you. So that's great. And to see what that fascia looks like inside and understand that it's an incredibly sensitive system for hydrating us and passing information back and forth. And to be in motion is to still be vital and alive. And, you know, water is, in essence, it really is. Thanks so much. Now, so you got to help me spread this stuff, right? Tell somebody.
Sounds wonderful. Perfect. All right. Dr. Jeff?
Many, many thanks, Gina. That was wonderful. Hope you come back soon, and good luck with all your studies. Everyone, we're going to peek. Diving into water's use in regenerative farming next week with the veterinarian dairy farmer that uses all regenerative, you know, methods and herbals, and actually even has a special product for cow mastitis. That'll be next week. And Gina, good luck and Thank you.
What a pleasure. Thanks so much.
Right. Thank you all for coming. Bye. Okay. Bye. Bye.